Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Way of the Dreamer. This is the show where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to help us lead juicier, fuller lives. And we have a wonderful guest today whose life and personal story of healing is inspiring. Her name is Anna Bromley. She's reaching to us today from the West Midlands of England. She's a shamanic teacher and healer. I know she's a good dreamer and teacher of active dreaming because she studied with me. I know she's a good writer, and she's a writing coach and editor. She came to a writing retreat with me in Bohemia some years ago. She's a mother. She has a scientific background as well as a big experience of shamanic journeying and dream work, scientific background in biochemistry, experience in R&D for medical equipment industry. And she's here today to celebrate and share the gifts of her new book, which is called A Wild Adventure on the Big Sea. And you probably don't need to be a psychic intuitive to figure out that the Big Sea might be Cancer. Her story, Anna's story, is indeed a very brave and beautiful story of using every resource possible to turn a life-challenging illness into a mythic drama that becomes an adventure. It's about healing a life, not just a symptom. Anna, it's so good to talk to you.
It's wonderful to be here and wonderful to hear your voice again, Robert.
One of the things that I know, and you told me about even before the book came out, but it's in the book and it's so important, is that dreams and dream work came in right away as a source of healing after you'd been given a very cold clinical diagnosis of an invasive metastasizing breast cancer. And that night, as I recall, you had an exciting dream. It left you with some mixed feelings. You'd asked for a dream, and then because of the mixed feelings, you decided the dream as it came to you was not enough. So you dived back into the dream, which is a technique we call dream reentry, and you got more, and you put it to work. Will you tell us that story by way of introduction? Because that takes us right into the heart of some of the practical techniques people can learn from you, specifically dream incubation and what we call dream reentry. Will you tell that story?
Sure. So I got home from the terrible news of the diagnosis of lobular cancer, and I was on a course with you at the time, the Dreamers School of Soul, a 6-month in-depth course with you. So I thought, well, I'm going to use this chance to apply what I've learned, which is really, really important to me. And I did a dream incubation. So I asked, you know, what my dream guides had to say about this diagnosis, and was there a path for healing for me? And I woke in the morning with this dream where I was standing on a hillside, and it was a beautiful hillside, like a sort of Devon countryside, going down to the sea, and lots of lovely properties and beautiful gardens and rural lanes, and then this cliff and the sea. And I was looking out to sea, and on the sea was this old-fashioned sailing ship, and it came into view, and on deck there were these lots of young, handsome, athletic-looking men. Again, sort of quite old-fashioned, you know, in the sort of billowing white shirts and sailor's trousers. They proceeded to dive into the sea and swim to shore and then swarm all over this hillside, picking berries and gleaning little bits of money and jewels and things from the houses, and then they went back, swam back to the ship, and off they sailed. And whilst I was looking, there was one particular guy who looked up at me and caught my eye and winked at me, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So yeah. So
it sounds like a very good dream so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there were some other bits where I, having seen how athletic these men were, I thought, oh, I'll go and get some, I'd like to get some berries and things. So I tried to run up the hill, but I didn't have the energy. And I went into some of the houses and I was worried about being caught. And then there was some other stuff about farm machinery going up and down the lanes, and it was all muddy and sludgy, and so the ending of the dream wasn't as positive as the beginning of it. So when I woke up, I thought, oh, that was a big dream. That wasn't just one of those ones where you're sorting out in your head what happened over the day. That was a significant dream. So then I used the dream reentry technique. So I did a shamanic journey, and I journeyed back into the dream, and I wanted particularly to talk to the guy who winked at me on board the ship, because I thought he sounded like an interesting character. So in the dream, I was back on the hillside, and I dived into the sea, and I swam out to the ship, and the men all helped me back onto the ship, and then I had a conversation with the guy there who was waiting for me. And he told me that his name was Michael, and he was my breast friend, and he was going to be my guide. Yes,
right.
My breast friend, which made me laugh. And he was going to be my guide for my healing journey with cancer. And he proceeded to tell me several things that I needed to do at the beginning of my healing journey, and said that I could journey back to him any time that I needed more help and guidance. And, you know, over the process of my healing time, I did journey back to him several times. And I also used the imagery from the dream. Every morning I would do a visualization, and I would imagine that the ship was coming into harbor, and the guys were coming off the ship and onto land. And they were actually, he told me that they represented my really powerful immune cells. So I imagined them all going into the lump and dismantling it and throwing it into the sea where it was washed away or eaten by the sharks. And that was a really big part of my healing.
What a great
yeah.
gift. What a great gift as you developed the dream and found, as I hear you, an ally who presumably stayed around. Were you conscious of Michael as a presence or a voice in your mind after that time?
Well, my suspicion is that he was actually Archangel Michael in a different form, because I work with Archangel Michael quite a lot. So he came.
He does turn up in lots of places, doesn't he? He turns up
yeah.
quite frequently. I think there must be many of him, but, you know, archangels can no doubt project thousands of versions of themselves. And what about the platoon or the flotilla of bold and beautiful young seamen? Did they stay around? Did you see them again?
Yes, I did. Every morning I would do this visualization, and they came back every morning. It kind of morphed as we went along, you know, different phases of the journey. So they'd be doing different things. Sometimes, to start off with, they were clearing out lots of stuff, and Michael told me that the sludginess and the muddiness in the lanes was a metaphor for my lymph system being a bit sludgy. So they were getting hose pipes, and they were like hosing out the channels, and then it developed on In the end, they were rebuilding. It was like they were rebuilding the structure. So, I directed it myself to start off with, but it developed it into, you know, a life of its own, really. So So that was all very interesting and wonderful.
How wonderful to be given an alternative landscape, imaginal architecture of what's going on inside the body, and a company of brave spirits who are going to go to work to get things right. The story is reminding me a bit of a novel by Madeleine L'Engle, A Wind in the Door. I don't know whether you've ever read that one. But the children have to save the youngest of the children, who's very sick, and the only way they can do it is to get themselves right inside the body, inside the mitochondria, in fact, where they find a whole society of characters representing different elements in the body's cell system and so on, and they go to work. I used to recommend that to people to understand how deep imaginal healing could go. That, of course, was a fantasy story, although Madeleine L'Engle might have had some real-life material that she developed. Yours is a real-life story. And one of the remarkable things in your story, Anna, is you found the courage against doctors who apparently are shouting at you, telling you you're going to die unless you took the most invasive measures, mastectomy and chemicals and radiation and all that stuff. And you basically managed to put yourself on a path in which you avoided most of that against the advice and even the shouts of some of your doctors, buoyed by your dreams and a mythic sense that there was a deeper calling here and you were meant to follow that. Let me jump early to a question I was planning to ask you towards the end of the conversation, but I feel I want to ask now. I was talking to someone today who joined an African tradition of healing. He's actually joined the tradition of the Xhosa Sangoma or healer. And we are talking about a concept which in the Xhosa language of South Africa is called Thwasa. Thwasa. Thwasa is a calling sickness, a sickness that calls you. It might threaten your life. It may make you feel really rotten. And yet what's going on is the greater powers, your greater self, the ancestors, the gods, are calling you to a new beginning. The literal meaning of the word is a new emergence or a new beginning. And you found mythic power in the challenge that was set you, and you found mythic allies. We'll talk about more about that in a moment. Is that a concept that applies to your understanding of what you've been through, that it was, whatever else it was, a calling sickness, a sickness that called you to go deeper in life and in soul than you might have gone otherwise?
I think that's a very good description of what happened to me. When I had the diagnosis, I was in complete shock. No one in my family had ever had cancer before, and I thought I had a healthy diet and, pretty healthy lifestyle. So cancer wasn't on my radar at all. But the more the journey went on, the more I began to think, this is my life's calling. This is a mission. This is something for me to bring forward that can help other people. It can not only help myself, I really had to delve deep, as you said, to uncover many ancestral wounds in my lineage, past life wounds. I had to address it from every single level. But the gem that was uncovered by all that delving is really something for me to bring forward to give other people hope that there is another way, there's a better way, a gentler, more magical way of healing from this terrible disease than what is being presented by the mainstream medics. So absolutely, and I think the biggest message for me is about self-sovereignty, and it's about realizing that we create everything in our lives. We are really powerful creators and manifestors. And what I realized was that I was very powerfully creating a lot of suffering in my life, and that if I could create suffering, I could turn that around and create something much better and more joyful for my life, and then show other people how to do the same. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right that's exactly what this illness is all about for me.
You tell us in the book, and again, the title of Anna's book, which reflects really a very game, a very brave willingness to revision
terrible life-threatening situation. The title of the book is A Wild Adventure on the Big Sea, subtitled My Journey of Natural Healing for Cancer. Here's something that she says to give us more of an overview of what she did out of her own resources and her own dreaming in pursuit of self-healing. And as you say repeatedly, not just healing a disease, but healing life, healing a life. I'm quoting Anna too, Anna. Quote, I tapped into the creative power of my dreams and used shamanic journeying to call on help from the angels, my power animals, and my spirit guides. I journeyed back in time to heal and comfort my inner child who had taken on limiting beliefs about herself that contributed to creating my cancer. Using information from my dreams and journeys, I traveled inside my body to actively break down my cancer and expel it from my body. I journeyed to meet the spirit of healing plants that are known to kill cancer cells to ask for their help in my healing. I'm quoting Anna too. Anna, we've talked a little bit about traveling inside the body with your company of Bold Seamen. Talk to us about your statement that you were able to travel back to your inner child who'd taken on limiting beliefs that might have contributed to creating your cancer. I know it's possible to travel across time to a younger self and do some good. I've done it in my own life, and I've taught other people how to do it. Tell us your experience of this. I mean, this is really very exciting stuff, Anna.
Yes, quite early on in my healing journey, I wanted to talk to my power animal, or one of my power animals, who is this beautiful, big, magnificent white lion, who is so helpful and so courageous and gives me so much strength. And I journeyed to him to ask him, you know, what I can do to heal. And he was the one that told me that I had taken on limiting beliefs as a child. I was teased a lot as a little girl, and you could probably say bullied as well. And as that little sort of 4 to 6 year old girl, I became, through the teasing, think of myself as in some way deformed or, you know, not quite good enough. And so I had, you know, internalized that, and the cancer was part of, you know, creating that for myself. So the healing was to journey back in time to meet that little girl that was so upset about being called these teasing names. And so I went back, met my little girl, and Mother Bear was there, and Mother Bear held my little girl on her lap and comforted her, and we together told her how amazing she was, and told her all about how she was going to grow up and be this amazing magical woman who could journey and work with the angels and power animals, and that there was nothing wrong with her, that she was a really beautiful magical being. And worthy of good health and all the rest of it. And yeah, that was how I comforted my inner child. And I was the confirmation about the healing that was came through my dreams. I dreamt shortly after that. I dreamt of my little girl just playing on the beach, so happy and carefree. And that was the confirmation to me that healing was working.
This is really very intriguing and very inspiring. And later on in the show, I'm going to ask you to tell us about another track on which you traveled back to a younger self to see whether, you know, you could actually a parallel self and see whether you could bring together gifts from parallel lifetimes. You see, Anna, I'm speaking to listeners now, it's really a very good journey and a bold one. And one of the things we're going to learn from her as we go on is that in addition to being able to reach across time to a younger self and maybe affect healing in that time and our present time and across the continuum, we might be able to look in on, actually visit parallel timelines and sit down for tea, in this case, with a parallel self who made different choices, see what we can do for each other. You know, I've been very patient, Anna, because I wanted you to tell us about Crete, and I want you to tell us about entering an imaginal version or a far memory version of a memory across many lifetimes of the Asclepian mode of dream healing and meeting the gods and spirits of that part of the world. So we'll probably have to pause partway through the narration, but tell us visit to Crete. Actually, we'll pause now because we're approaching the end of this segment. We'll devote as much of the next shorter segment as you like because it's a fascinating story, and the renewal that you found on the island and the sense of connection with an ancient and highly potent method of dream healing and the access to mythic power that came through make a wonderful story. And of course, we'll enjoy for a moment the landscapes that you traveled, including those razor sharp rocks you had to get over in a somewhat weakened condition. So we're talking to Anna Bromley. She is many things. She's a shamanic journeyer. She's a dream work practitioner. She's a mother. She is a self-healer. And I think she offers healing to others. And the book we're talking about is A Wild Adventure on the Big Sea. And Anna, if people want to know more about you, is there a website or some way they can get in touch?
Yes, I have a website. It's just anna-bromley.com.
Okay, remember anna-bromley.com. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right, you can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Back with Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. Do hop over to my website, mossdreams.com. You'll see that there are a number of new events there, including a short, very potent course in the core techniques of active dreaming I'm doing for my friends at Alternatives in London. If you haven't done one of my courses or workshops before, doing this course would fulfill a key prerequisite for taking my Dream Teacher Training Level 1, which launches the following month. Just a nudge, just a little push. Our wonderful guest today is Anna Bromley. She's telling us about her journey of self-healing, and she's going to take us to Crete and the adventures that she had there. Over to you, Anna. Take us to the island.
So quite early on in my healing journey, I really was desperate to go on holiday, and as a family, we were all desperate to just get away from cancer healing and talking about, you know, depressing things about cancer. So we love Crete. We all love Crete as a family, and we've been there several times. So we booked a holiday to Crete, and just prior to that, I, as on your course, Robert, you lead a wonderful journey to the temple of Asclepius, the Greek god of healing. And he had told me, he was the one that told me to go and get the diagnosis. He basically said, don't treat it as cancer, but go and get diagnosed. So when we got to Crete, we stayed in this wonderful little apartment with a wonderful guy, Georgios, who ran it. And we were asking him, you know, where are good places to go? And he told us about this walk that we could go on the southern side of the island from a little port town called Sugia. And then you could walk up through over the hill to a place where there was an Asclepian temple. And my ears immediately pricked up because I thought, whoa, that sounds really, really interesting. So we booked on a coach to go to Sugia and then walk. And as he said it, he believed that it's just a gentle little walk for an hour and a half to get to this Asclepian temple. And then there was a walk down from there to the coast in a little bay where you could swim from a Minoan harbour. So that all sounded really wonderful to us. So we caught the bus very early in the morning. Rewind a little bit. I wanted to find out a bit more about how Asclepius could help me. And I did another dreaming station to tell Asclepius that we were coming to his temple and how I might best proceed to get the best healing from that. So I woke from the dream and I remembered snippets of it, but not very clearly. So I did another dream re-entry, and the dream came through very clearly, and Asclepius came and he said, it's going to be a tough journey for you to walk to the temple. But call me in and I'll give you a piggyback. Which came making me laugh.
I'll
make it easy for you. Because I had prior to my cancer, I'd had two hip replacements and I was still suffering from mobility issues with the second one that didn't go very well. So problems with my hip and my lower back, which makes going on those kind of treks quite difficult. So I was a little bit nervous about that. So he said, you know, come and make an offering to me at the beginning of the journey and I'll help you. So that's what we did. We found the start of this trek that was very well signposted, and we stopped and we made offerings. And we also got a really strong feeling that mountain goat was with us as a power animal as well to help us skip across the rocks. So this was myself, my husband, and my daughter, who was about 11 or 12, I think, at the time. So she skipped on ahead and scouted out the route for us, and we clambered over these massive rocks, and we went up and up and up. It was very beautiful, but quite tiring, and we started off early, and it was cool, and it got hotter and hotter, and eventually we got to the top of this plateau with really razor-sharp volcanic rocks that I thought my sandals were going to get sliced in half any minute. But we managed to get there, and I really felt that I was being held and lifted up, because it was so much easier than I had expected it to be. And we arrived at this amazing ruins of the Asclepian temple with huge breast stones everywhere. And there was one part of the temple that was still quite intact with this beautiful mosaic of a bird. And Asclepius had told me to find this special stone in front of the altar to sit on, and that he would come and heal me from there. So I crossed the mosaic, and there was this marble basin where the healing spring used to come into the temple, and there was my stone that I needed to sit on just in front of that. So I called Asclepius in, and I really felt his presence arrive, like this huge presence. And he is famous for having a snake, which is his healing power. And the snake just rose up through my sort of energy body, from my feet right up to my head. And I felt like he was, you know, really cleaning out and energizing my chakra system. And at the same time, Asclepius was working on me and doing extractions of energy that shouldn't have been there. And after all that happened, I felt quite shaky, actually, and a little bit overwhelmed. But he said, right, go and find the spring now, drink from the spring, and then go and bathe in the sea. So I had no idea where the spring was, but I came out of the temple, and my daughter and husband met me and said, "We found it. We found where the tap is for the spring. Come and have a drink." And you know, it was really hot by this time, so we went, and it was so lovely to bathe in the spring and to drink this beautiful, clear, crystal, sweet water, and then to wander down through the ancient olive groves to the sea and to swim in the beautiful, crystal, clear waters of the bay. Yeah, so that was my experience.
What a wonderful chapter in your story. People are not sure who Asclepius is. Well, he's the god associated with healing, particularly through dreaming. His divine family includes his father Apollo, Apollo Paeon, Apollo the All-Healer, his mother Coronis, the crow woman who has a difficult life and death, his consort or daughter Hygeia, Panacea, Telesphorus, and he's accompanied often by a snake or a dog or sometimes a rooster, but the snake is important. Anna, everything that you described in terms of the spring and the snake, the sort of Western Kundalini, Asclepius, a snake, is called Draco, like the dragon, everything there would be recognized by the ancient Celeste testimonies of to Asclepian healing, but you added something. You added something to the canon. I've read a lot of the Asclepian testimonies, hundreds of them. I don't remember Asclepius giving anyone a piggyback, so congratulations on expanding our awareness of the range of activity and gifts and healings available in the temple of dream healing that the Greeks and then the Romans with them imagined. We're talking to Anna Bromley. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We're talking with Anna Bromley, her book about self-healing and fulfilling Joseph Campbell's axiom that healing is what happens when we move beyond suffering into myth. Anna's book is titled A Wild Adventure on the Big Sea, and you can find out more about her and her book at anna-bromley.com. So I want to take Anna into another area, parallel area. Parallel is the right word that fascinates me and perhaps everybody listening. You know, the many worlds hypothesis in physics says that at any moment we're living in an uncountable number of parallel worlds, in each of which we have a doppelganger, and that our universe is splitting all the time. Even the tiniest thing splits the universe. Well, I get a headache when I have to try and take that in. But on a more reasonable basis, a more manageable basis, the idea that we might be shadowed, not necessarily in a negative sense, shadowed by other selves of ourselves who made different choices and are living a life on a somewhat different continuum, one who got that illness, one who didn't, one who stayed in that job, one who left, one who stayed married to that person or never met them, and so on. I find this endlessly fascinating. I notice in my dreams, and perhaps you do too, if I collect them and watch over them for a while, that sometimes I seem to be living a serial life, a continuous life somewhere else, because I find myself again and again with similar people in a situation which is not my present life. It's as if I'm doing different things with people, sometimes the same, sometimes different, but different things in different places on a parallel track. And Jung came to a similar conclusion rather late in his life. He came to the conclusion that in dreams we might observe the fact we're living continuous lives somewhere else. So here's the big question about which Anna has a really interesting story to tell. If we do have many parallel selves, and if they are accessible, if we can look in on them, can we maybe gain something from that? I mean, maybe we can gain the satisfaction of knowing that we don't have to regret something in life we didn't live because we're living it somewhere else. But it goes far beyond that. Suppose we have a parallel self who made different choices and developed skills and assets and resources that we don't have because we didn't make that choice. Suppose we could meet up with that parallel self and do some good for each other, maybe exchange gifts, something that I know that my parallel self doesn't, maybe something she or he knows that I don't. Well, Anna, at a certain point in time, as I recall, decided she'd go to a parallel self who made a decision much earlier in life than she did to become a writer. And I think this journey went all the way back to decisions made about choices of courses at university. As I recall, Anna decided she would try to sit down and have tea with her parallel self, the successful writer who started out much earlier, and see what they could do for each other. Anna, I hope I haven't garbled that story. I'd love you to talk to us about it.
Yes, it was a really empowering journey to do, to meet my parallel self, who was Anna, the published author, from a much younger age than me. And yes, so we went for a cup of tea, a spiritual cup of tea, and sat down and chatted about where our lives went and how they overlapped and how they didn't overlap and how we could use each other's skills. And so the story is the other Anna going back as far as school, making decisions about which university to go to and what subject to study. This Anna in this life was told by the headmaster that smart girls do science, not art, and was pushed in the direction of biochemistry against my better judgment. And the whole time that I did that, I was thinking, oh, but I wish I'd done English, and I just want to be a writer. But down the line, the biochemistry actually came in very useful in helping me understand how this... how cancer works at a cellular level, but still really, really wanting to be a successful author. So the other Anna, at that point where she was told that smart girls do science, not art, said, stuff that, I'm going to do English. and I'm going to do creative writing at Vassar University. And then, you know, started her career in writing much earlier. But one of the things that she loved about what I'd done was that she hadn't done as much shamanic journeying with me. And so she was fascinated to hear about all the characters that I've met through my shamanic journeying and the mythic powers. And she drew inspiration from that for her books. And likewise, I drew inspiration from her about how she characterized people and how she developed her stories around those characters. So it was a mutually beneficial meeting and a lovely cup of tea with the parallel self.
It does so a lovely sense of possibility for those of us who are listening to you. And we can adapt your story, perhaps, and apply it in our own lives. And we don't have to settle the question, you know, is this imagination or is this a real transpersonal encounter? We're going to judge by the fruits. I think my most successful equivalent of what you're talking about is a very modest one. I have some parallel selves I'm very interested in, and I'm not sure that I'm going to succeed in bringing as much as I would like from them. They're very successful, also as writers, but in somewhat different genres. However, a parallel self who intrigues me is an artist. Like me, he loved art as a boy, and art was his favorite thing, even more than writing. This was true for me, too, but at a certain point, I stopped doing a lot of art, and I became a writer. There is a parallel Robert, maybe any number of them, who made careers as artists, and in one case, I mean, fantastically successful. I mean, think successful in popular terms, but successful in his mastery of his métier. And since I've been thinking about him, I found that I start most days by making a drawing or a painting or some kind of quickie artwork, usually on a small scale, and often inspired by my dreams. And I feel so alive and so happy. I think I'm really delighting the 9-year-old Robert and the 12-year-old Robert who love painting and sketching and so on. But I also feel I'm in touch with that artist self that I didn't really bring into full manifestation in this life. I will never catch up with him, and this isn't a negative mantra. I will never catch up with him in his mastery of techniques. I'm not going to spend all the time in mastering certain techniques of painting that he knows, although I suppose today in this age of digital AI and so on, you could cheat and bring in that stuff. But that's not his style. Anyway, I just like the sense that when I'm drawing and painting without any concern for my technical proficiency and then showing them to people on my Facebook page or somewhere else, I'm in tune with him, I'm close to him, and I'm also delighting the child self who comes out to play. But other people will have other thoughts about this, and other people will recognize that in their imaginings, in their yearnings, in their dreams, they do have a sense of what parallel selves are doing. Actually, there's a wonderful recent English novel about this called The Midnight Library, which I strongly recommend to people who want to think more about what parallel lives might be all about. It's about a woman who's hovering between life and death. She's in a library that is managed by a librarian who reminds her of her favorite library teacher in primary school. And all the books are bound in green, and all the books contain a life lived by the central character under different circumstances. I recommend it. It'll take you further in your thinking about what the world of the many worlds might be for you. We're talking to Anna Bromley. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. When we come back, I'm simply going to lay open a free field of exploration with Anna by asking her, what does she look for in her dreams these days? What's going on in her dreams? And she can ask me the same thing. We'll just talk a little bit about the quality and content of our dreams these days. Back after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
So we're talking to Anna Bromley. Her new book is A Wild Adventure on the Big Sea, and it is a wild adventure. Anna, let's just talk freely, randomly, about what's going on in our dreams, yours and mine these days. Let me mention a couple of things that is going on in my dreams. A couple of them very familiar, one or two of them startling. You know, I go to so many locations in my dreams that I don't know an ordinary reality, and although some of them could be precognitive dreams, places I'll come across, I am extremely interested in thinking about, sometimes sketching, making floor plans of different houses and places I go. I'm very conscious of traveling a lot in my dreams. I'm very conscious of my workaday dreams, which for me means, again and again and again, most nights of the week, I'm leading another workshop or giving a lecture far beyond what I ever did in ordinary reality, and some of these are retreats that go on for days. You know, time changes in dreams, so in a couple of hours of a sleep dream, lucid or not, I might be leading a three-day or five-day retreat somewhere. And then there are the startling and shocking things that make you realize you don't know everything about this and you never will. The other day, for example, I had a dream in which there's some tension going on with some man and it's beginning to get a bit calmer. Someone's interceded, and then he says to me, "You know, it's good that you speak up for yourself. It makes you sexier." And then I realize I'm a woman. I'm his wife in the dream. That's one of the startling moments. How did I get into her body, and what's that about? So these are just a sort of few free-floating vignettes. You're welcome to comment on that last bit if you like, but I'd really most like to hear you tell us what's going on in your dreams in general these days.
Yeah, so I think I was always fascinated by your work with dream archaeology when we were doing the courses together. And I've had a couple of dreams recently which relate to things that are going on in my everyday life. I live, as you mentioned, in very rural England on the borders between Wales and Herefordshire. And there's a lot of ancient sites around here. One of the most famous ones is a place called Arthur's Stone, which is one of these, there's several stones that are holding up an enormous great slab of stone that was possibly once a barrow with soil over the top of it. But also, sort of around these places, there are really, really active ley lines. But being the sleepy place that we're in now, not very much is known about them, and it's a bit of a backwater place. And my husband is a dowser, and I kind of douse more on an energetic feeling. So we've been exploring these places and how the ley lines might connect the different sites and how they might have been used in ancient times, and that's where my dreams are going now. I've been having these startling dreams about how these sites were used in former times, and also comparing them to places like Newgrange in Ireland, which I went to just after one of your courses there and was absolutely fascinated. How the ancient priestesses used to do rituals there and feed feminine energy into the lines, and that's where that's going. And Yeah, really, really interesting.
Very interesting to dream with the land, and you live deeply with the land in a rather rural part of the country, as you described. It's very interesting. But I think the ancestors are always trying to reach us, and I think there are three kinds of ancestors who are reaching to us. One are the ancestors of our bloodlines, one is the ancestors of the land, who may or may not be the same, and the third is the ancestors of our spiritual connection, who might be surprising because we might belong in the multidimensional universe to many different lineages and have connections with people and cultures all over the place. And you do feel that pull. And I know that the pull is very strong when you live close to the land, in a country where perhaps your people have been settled or unsettled for centuries. And there's a particular kind of connection that is reinforced and deepened by what comes through in dreams. I think now about how many sites have been either discovered or maybe more importantly understood. Their meaning has been understood by dreams. I remember when I was teaching in France, teaching this kind of stuff in France for the first time, I dreamed of a vanir, a standing stone of an unusual shape. It was called Le Poignard in my dream, the dagger. It was like a broad-bladed dagger, perhaps. Mm. And we had an amateur archaeologist there who had access to the records and all the maniers in France and couldn't find this one, but he said, I think I'm going to find it for you. I think it's around here. And he took us to a village called Gange, thought like Ganges in India. And beyond the village, there was the stone. Well, I hadn't just seen the stone in my dream. I had seen how it was used as a portal, how people could seemingly step through the stone, I think through the stone rather than around the stone, as if the stone itself was a doorway which would open under certain circumstances and step from one order of reality into another. So that's just riffing on what you're saying. I mean, that's one of the dreams of mine, which was pure dream archaeology in the sense that it identified something with an ancient history, but also began to explain the meaning. What was going on with this thing? Why did people revere it? Why was it maintained? So that's a very interesting and deep style of dreaming. And dream archaeology, which fascinates both of us, is a very rich practice, very rich subject. And I'd like to see more people doing more of it. Anything come up in your dreams recently which was startling or surprising to you?
No, not really. Just sort of more detail on that series of dreams about the stones. But in one of them, it was like an alchemical marriage. I was being initiated and prepared to marry into this lineage. And you mentioned that, you know, there are lineages of the ancestors. And this man was a nobleman who lived in this round tower on a particularly potent sort of portal and sacred site, and that we both had to be initiated and brought up to the right sort of level of spirituality before we were allowed to marry and then be the guardians of this particular site. So that was really fascinating.
Time is rushing away. Let me ask you, as maybe the last real question, what is the take-home message of your healing as you've described it in your book? What do you want people to understand from your example?
I think the take-home message is that our bodies are magical, and they can heal anything given the right circumstances, and those circumstances are multi-level, from physical, emotional, spiritual, and that our dreams can give us all the keys to what we need to do to change the circumstances so that our bodies have all the right ingredients to heal and come back into balance. And that we are masters of our own universe and our own destiny.
That's a very bold, very forthright, very invigorating message. Thank you. Let's take that with us.
We've been talking with Anna Bromley. Her new book is A Wild Adventure on the Big C. We'll be back at Big C like cancer. We'll be back after the break basically to say thank you and dream onward.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us from Herefordshire. Lots of hugs. And may your magical statement about what we can do for our bodies and our lives be lived by all of us.
Thank you so much, Robert. It's been an absolute delight talking to you. And thank you for putting this wonderful, interesting show out to everyone.
All right, to everyone, as you go forward on your roads of soul and your roads of dreaming, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.